The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, this is the fifth week, the last evening of our series on an exploration of body and mind. And there's so much to say. I'm going to try to put three topics in this evening. We'll see how far we get. So I just wanted to kind of review a little bit to begin with. Basically we could look at our experience from a very high-level perspective. We could look at it just as that there's basically two things going on. You know, there's things going on in our bodies and there's things going on in our minds. And exploring the connection between these two is very interesting. There's a very tight coupling between the body and the mind. Things that happen in the body impact how we feel and think and perceive. And things that happen in our minds impact what happens in our body. So it's this bidirectional exploration. And I feel I have found in my own practice that really exploring, getting familiar with the body and what is the body helped me to begin to tease apart the many different aspects of the mind. There's so many different processes and activities that happen in the mind. I just read this incredible number today. I was reading a book and it said something along the lines that, you know, the number of states that can happen in our mind is somewhere in the order of 10 to the power of, oh, I don't remember, it was like some really high number, a million or something, you know, some astronomical number. And the book said, well, in contrast, to just put this in perspective of how many states this is, the number of atoms in the known universe is said to be something like 10 to the 80th power. So this is a phenomenal number of things that can happen in our minds. So it's what I found in my own practice is that it's really interesting and helpful to get very familiar with the what happens in the body and how it relates to the mind as a way to begin to understand much more clearly what the mind is and how it does what it does. And so over the course of the weeks, the first week I really emphasized the body and exploring just what bodily experience is as the ground for this exploration. That there's often a confusion or a conflation between body and mind around many areas, and I've mentioned some of them in these past weeks. We've talked about emotion and how the body and mind interact in emotion. We've talked about feeling tone, whether things are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And that's actually understood to be a mental experience. The recognition of things as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral is a mental experience. And yet it's often conflated with an unpleasant experience in the body, that it is a body thing that's happening, this unpleasantness, but it's understood to be something mental. The physical thing that's happening is perhaps tension, tightness, pain, burning, something like that. So the understanding of what the body actually is begins to help us to sort out what is body and what is mind. And this really begins to help us to recognize how much of our reactivity, how much of our struggles, how much of our stress, our suffering, our the ways that we're not satisfied with life, that it's not so much about the physical world and our bodies, it's much more about our minds. And so this exploration that I've been doing these past few weeks, we've been kind of going through some different ways that the mind works. So talking, as I said, about emotions and feelings, and last week talking about perception and recognizing creation of concepts and ideas. And so basically through these weeks, I've started from the obvious. The body is probably the most obvious experience that we have in terms of being able to recognize processes, you know, recognizing the pressure of our butt on the chair or the sensations of our hands touching. These things we can recognize pretty easily. They're kind of obvious in our experience. Emotions are also pretty obvious. We're pretty familiar with recognizing emotions. And as I've gone from the kind of more obvious to the more subtle. So talking about feeling, the recognition of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral is a little more subtle than emotion. And the recognition of the way the mind creates concept, while very familiar to us, it's so easily tied with the body, and it's a process that happens so naturally that we don't actually recognize it so well as a process that's happening in our minds. It's not so easy for us to recognize how that perception happens. And so I talked about that some last week. Today I'd like to move into some perhaps even subtler forms of the way the mind and body interact. And these include looking at intention, and looking at views and beliefs, and looking at knowing or consciousness. So these are the three pieces I'd like to explore tonight about how the mental processes and how we can begin to explore these mental processes in contrast to the body. Begin to understand these mental processes through seeing how they impact the body and how the body impacts them. Now, I just want to say that in all of this discussion that we've been having over these last weeks, it's not just the body that impacts these processes. It's not simply that we take in physical experience and that the mind deals with that. The mind manipulates its own mental experience as well. It perceives its own mental experience. It feels the mental experience. It can have reactivity to mental experience. But the thrust of this course is to begin to, you know, be able to recognize some of these more subtle mental experiences. And some of the easiest way to do that is in contrast to the body. And so that's why I'm emphasizing the body and how these processes interact with the body. It's not that this is the only way that these things are seen. I just wanted to put that out there. And hopefully as I talk about these, you'll also see the ways that that these things are also processes that respond off of mental experience as well as physical experience. So the first one that I'd like to talk about is intention. And this is really a key interface between the mind and the body with respect to action. Any action that we do with our body is preceded by a mental impulse to do, to act. Every action of body or speech and mind, every action of body, speech, and mind is preceded by this mental impulse to do something. Now, this is a subtle experience. It's actually in certain ways it can be seen. Like if you begin to notice, in particular with respect to body, if you start paying attention to changes in posture and start recognizing, you know, that, you know, you're about to stand up, that moment of knowing that you're about to stand up before you stand up, you do know this. It actually is in the mind. There's some part of the mind that knows, that has prodded you into standing. And there's a part of your awareness that can recognize that impulse to stand up. That moment of being aware that we are about to do something, that is what this intention is. That is this factor of intention in the mind, this impulse to act. So the impulse itself is kind of just a neutral experience, and it's in and of itself it is understood to just simply be an impulse to do. And yet it is always accompanied not just by that impulse to do, but by some motivation, some reason why we are going to do that thing. And that is really where this area of exploration into intention gets really interesting. it gets interesting with respect to how we create and move into our reactivity. Because very often when we are about to act, there is some kind of spin on that action that is, you know, really often in our days, it is motivated by something less than wholesome. Often it's motivated by a little bit of greed or a little bit of aversion, or sometimes even a lot of aversion or a lot of greed. And the, you know, this point of the moment of recognizing intention and seeing intention, the Buddha pointed to this point as being crucial for us in terms of learning how to steer our minds towards happiness. Because this is the moment, in this moment when we are making choices about how to behave in the world, that is the moment that the rest of our lives unfold from. And when we choose out of greed or aversion or delusion, we are cultivating that quality of greed or aversion or delusion in our minds, and our, you know, the results of those actions tend towards suffering. We can also choose out of compassion, kindness, wisdom. We can choose out of beautiful emotions, beautiful qualities, non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. If we choose, if our intentions have an accompanying motivation of generosity, of kindness, of wisdom, of compassion, that tends to lead us towards happiness. And so the Buddha really pointed to this moment of intention and seeing this intention and its accompanying motivation as a really important area to pay attention to. And we can begin to recognize it. We can begin to see that it's possible to notice this moment. You know, a great place to play with this is when we're speaking. I know that everybody in this room has had a situation where you've regretted something that you've said. This is a human condition. And so one great exploration is to see if you can simply pause before you speak. In that pause, if you can pause before you speak, you have essentially caught the intention to speak. You have recognized, oh, I'm about to speak, and you're taking a moment to pause. So in that pause, if you can pause before you speak, and that itself is not simple, I have to say. This is not a simple practice I'm offering you. It's not just like, oh, yes, go and pause before you speak. You know, this is hard. But it is possible. It is possible to do this. And in that moment, if you can pause, you will probably see, you will see definitely that you're about to speak. You will probably know pretty much what you're going to say. And you may even be able to see the reason why you're going to say it. And in catching that intention, in catching that moment of being about to do something before you do something, we have a choice. We can choose whether or not to follow through on that intention. Choosing wisely, or perhaps seeing, oh, this word that's about ready, or the way that I'm about ready to say this, maybe there's a better way to say it. Can I pause for just a moment and reflect on what maybe a kinder way to say this would be, or a less harsh way to say this would be? So seeing this moment of intention is a real point of how we cultivate skillful choices, and there's a direct connection between being able to recognize this and guiding ourselves towards much more happiness in our lives. We really have the opportunity to alter the course of our lives if we can catch that moment of intention. And this is possible to do in our daily lives. I see it. Not for small, you know, intention happens every, I mean, just that movement I did. There was not only just the intention to do that, but everywhere along in the movement, there was the intention to keep going until it stopped. So there are millions of intentions that happen. We can try to catch them. A good place to try to catch them is before speech. That's a good one to try to catch it. Or between major bodily actions, you know, major movements, major, you know, decisions that we make. You know, the decision to, here's a good example, or kind of a simple example, but one that is fairly easy to understand or recognize. So just let me put the picture out there and see if I can show you different ways that this might unfold depending on the intention and the motivation that are happening. So you're working, you're sitting at your computer, and you've been sitting there for a couple of hours, and then at some point you get up to go to the kitchen to get something to eat or to drink. So that movement of getting up from the computer, there's an intention there. You know, you've been sitting for a while, and so you've been sitting for a while, and the major bodily movement is to get up. So there's an intention behind that. Now, it may be as simple as you've been sitting there for a couple of hours, and the body has become thirsty. So the body has triggered an impulse. The thirst from the body has triggered the impulse, the wish to get up to get something to drink. So that's a fairly neutral reason to get up. And then you could imagine a scenario where you've been sitting working at your computer for a couple of hours and you've been working on this project and everything that you're doing is running into roadblocks. And after a couple of hours of this, you are so frustrated that you just can't stand to sit in front of the computer anymore. And kind of in frustration and annoyance, you throw your papers down and you storm up and, you know, go to the kitchen to get something to eat or drink. There's a huge difference in the state of mind that gets up simply because it's thirsty and the state of mind that that chooses to move out of that frustration and annoyance. So, you know, so in moving out of that frustration and annoyance, and I've seen myself when I get annoyed, I tend to be really careless in how I move. You know, I may run into the furniture or kick something or trip over something. This is a direct consequence of the mind state that initiated the action. So that's kind of a simple description or example to give you a sense of how intention and the motivation behind it impacts us. So in terms of this interrelationship between the mind and the body around intention, you know, I think most of us are familiar with the notion or the idea that what's going on in our minds impacts our behavior. In that description I just gave, you know, the frustration of working on the computer translated into physical clumsiness or it translated into the body. And we're familiar with that kind of direction of, you know, the mind influencing the body. And there's that intention there. It's the intention or the motivation have that impact. And we're all pretty familiar with that, and in a way we're kind of comfortable with that direction. It's kind of like, yeah, well, if I'm frustrated and angry, well, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to show it. You know, we're taught to express ourselves. It's, you know, it's not good to hold things in, right? That's one of our operating modes in this culture. You know, we feel angry, we express it. This is, you know, it's not good to hold it in. So we feel frustrated, we show it in the way that we, you know, throw things on the floor as we walk through the house. So we're familiar with that direction. You know, if we're peaceful in our minds, we behave peacefully. If we're frustrated in our minds, our behavior is frustrated. But this interrelationship, and particularly around intention, goes both ways. So that, you know, the way that we behave can impact our minds. So that if we choose to behave peacefully, even if we're not feeling peaceful, or if we choose to behave patiently, even if we're not feeling patient, it can have a rebound effect on our minds. Now, this is, when I talk about this, I want to be really clear what I'm saying here, because I'm not talking about repression of the feeling. So, for instance, if you are impatient and the feeling of impatience is there, and you want to play with this kind of practice of seeing, well, what happens if I try to behave patiently? I'm not talking about trying to stuff the feeling. Actually, what I'm talking about is completely, fully acknowledging the feeling, knowing definitely, yes, I'm feeling impatient, but kind of like becoming an actor at that point. Can I allow this impatience to be felt and yet not leak into my behavior? When I do this kind of exploration, it's really interesting, and it's amazing to me how quickly it rebounds on my mind. And I can be impatient and see myself kind of moving quickly, and my behavior expressing the feeling in the mind. And when I recognize that, acknowledging, okay, yep, there's the feeling. There's the feeling of impatience. Not trying to deny that I'm feeling that, but kind of saying, okay, what if I were to behave as though I wasn't impatient? Seeing if I can not allow that to leak out into my body. In my experience, it often takes less than a minute for the mind to shift. The impatience turns into patience. So this is an exploration we can make. Now, the reason this works, in effect, is because of intention. You know, the behavior, cultivating that behavior, is cultivating it with the intention to cultivate the patience. So the body, moving the body with that intention, supports that cultivation of that quality in our minds. So this can be a really, I find this to be a fun exploration, particularly when it's not a terribly strong thing. I mean, if you're experiencing strong emotion, it may be impossible to not have it leak out into your body without that repression. And repression is usually not a good idea. Sometimes we can put aside, we can ignore, we can try to take ourselves out of a situation if there's a very strong emotion. But, the repression of the feeling does tend to come from a place of aversion. And if we are repressing a strong feeling, it's just adding, it's like adding more fuel to the fire, in effect. We are just increasing the, essentially what we're doing is we're responding to that situation with an intention of aversion, and it cultivates aversion. So that's why repression is not so helpful. It's not a good idea to repress, but we can explore the possibility of feeling the feelings without expressing it in our behavior. Play with that possibility. It's quite powerful. So I'd also like to talk about views. And this is a big topic. And so what I thought I would do actually is just kind of hit some highlights and how we can explore a little bit about views with respect to our body. And then, not next week, because I'm away next week, but the following week I thought I would do a little more extended discussion about views. So, you know, I'll kind of continue a little bit some of the themes from this class in a couple of weeks when I come back. I'll be on retreat next week. So I'll just talk a little bit. I'll just kind of give you a kind of an overview of some of the ways to explore views and beliefs. So views, beliefs, we all operate with beliefs and views, and many of the beliefs and views that we operate with are not terribly conscious. They're kind of the water that we're swimming in, or the air that we're breathing. They're just so enmeshed in our minds that we don't even recognize that we're operating through a belief. So just to give you a couple examples around this, you know, there are cultural beliefs that we're told regularly that are so repeated that they kind of just come into our mental milieu, and we just live from these places. So daily, we are told, particularly in the American culture, that everyone here has an equal opportunity, and that if we work hard enough, you can accomplish what you want to. It's kind of a underlying cultural belief that we function with. This belief has some impacts on us. I mean, it impacts not only us, but it impacts our culture in a way, or impacts our relationship with other people. That this belief that everyone has an equal opportunity and all we have to do is work hard enough leads to a kind of a blindness around privilege for in particular for white people, a privilege that white people have in this culture that is not the case for people of color in this culture. And it leads to a kind of a blindness, it can lead to a kind of a prejudice of not seeing this white privilege, because this is one of the ways in which one of the beliefs on which racism lies, one of the beliefs on which prejudice arises. Not only that, I mean, it also comes back to ourselves, because we have this belief for ourselves: if I just work hard enough, I can be happy. If I work hard enough, I can get what I want, and getting what I want will make me happy. That's another belief we have. Getting what I want will make me happy. And so we somehow believe, putting these two pieces together, we believe that if we work enough, hard enough, we can be happy. You know, that is what happens when we work hard enough, or that is what happens if we are good enough, or do things right. If we do things right, we'll be happy. We do things right, we'll get what we want, and we'll be happy. And so what this can lead to is a whiplash. If I don't, it's my fault. It's my fault if I'm not happy. That, you know, that I'm to blame. A feeling of self-negativity can arise from this belief. So some of these beliefs are, you know, they're not so exposed for us. And there's many of these kinds of beliefs, and I won't go into some of the ones that I've come up with. I will talk about some of the ones around the body, though. We have a lot of views around the body, views of attractiveness, mostly, again, based on cultural ideals, commercials of what beautiful 20-somethings look like. And this is based on culture. You know, when I was in the Peace Corps, I was in the South Pacific, and they had very different views of beauty there. you know, many of us at that time when I was there, you know, we were pretty thin, pretty skinny. Several of the women particularly were pretty thin. And we were called Bone Bone. This was they have a pigeon, a kind of an English pigeon. They said, Bone Bone, you Bone Bone. And this was not a compliment. On the other hand, when I, at one point, you know, a couple of months into the time, I started to put on a little bit of weight, and I went back to the village where I had done my original training, and they came and said, oh, you fat, fat. It's like, ooh, okay. It was a compliment. It was a compliment. You put on weight, you look at when saying, you fat, fat, that was a good thing. So, you know, this is cultural. Our views of our body and what beauty is, it's cultural. You know, there's views of what the capacities of our bodies are. You know, a classic example around this is the 4-minute mile. You know, that for a long time it was thought not physically possible for somebody to break the 4-minute mile. But when it happened, as soon as it was shown possible, a lot of people broke it. So there's a kind of the views that we have about our capacity can inherently be self-limiting. So our beliefs about our bodies, our beliefs about our capacities, our beliefs about our attractiveness, what we can do, what we're capable of, are very intertwined with a sense of self often. You know, we have views about, you know, and a lot of this is related to comparison. I'm more attractive or less attractive than that person, or I'm skinnier or fatter than that person, or I wish I was as you know, I had hair the color of that person, or, you know, there's a lot of this comparison that goes on. So there's inherently a kind of a self-other process that goes on around these views and around our sense of our bodies and what our bodies are capable of and what our qualities are. So these beliefs are kind of entwined with a sense of self. I'm a thin person, or I'm a fat person. These are simply ideas, and as ideas, as beliefs, they can impact how we move through the world. So, just in terms of beliefs, it's really interesting to see if you can begin to touch into what beliefs are operating. And a good place to do this is if there's any kind of suffering, dissatisfaction happening in your experience, there's some kind of belief operating. So if there's any kind of suffering going on, a good question to ask yourself is, what do I believe here? What kind of underlying belief is happening here? Do I believe that something needs to happen? Do I believe that this is not supposed to be happening? I saw that for myself today. I didn't feel very good today, I took a long nap this afternoon to see if I could get a little bit more energy. And as I was driving here, I really felt so heavy. You know, a lot of just the body felt dull and heavy. And there's a slight feeling or movement. There's just this kind of just subtle belief, I'm not supposed to feel like this when I'm going to teach. You know, just this, it's like, well, this is what I feel. Okay, you know, but so there was just this subtle belief that this isn't supposed to be happening. But when I saw that belief, it's like, okay, well, this is what's happening. And there was a kind of a little shifting around. It's like, okay, it's not such a big deal. So I'm a little tired, you know. I can give a talk when I'm tired. So, you know, looking at beliefs and how they inform our suffering, essentially. So asking that question, you know, what are the facts of the situation and what are the beliefs? You know, I just gave one example. You know, the facts of the situation were the body was tired. There was a little bit of heaviness. And then there was a little bit of belief that not supposed to be this way. It's going to be hard to give a talk. It's going to be difficult. And just a little bit of that projection. That's not fact. That's the mind doing stuff. And when I could just come back to, oh, the body feels a little tired and heavy. It's like, okay, this isn't a problem. Another example, you know, you're talking to somebody and you see a funny expression pass over their face. What's happened is that were talking with them, you said some words, and a funny expression passed over their face. Those are the facts. What we often will do with that kind of thing is believe we understand what was happening in their minds that created that expression and impute something. They don't like me. They don't believe my idea. They think I'm lying. Whatever. We impute something to that. So can you distinguish between what the facts are and what the belief is? So just playing with that. I had this happen at one point. I was on a vacation with an old boyfriend and I had some kind of major dysentery kind of thing going on, and he came into the room, and I had some kind of really bad expression on my face because my stomach hurt really bad, and he almost blew up. He's like, "Well, you don't look like you're having a very good time, and what's wrong with our relationship?" And it's like, wait a minute, I have a really bad stomach ache. You know, you have just completely misinterpreted my facial expression. So what are the facts? Looking at the facts. And what is your imputation? What are the beliefs? What are you adding to the situation? And so I will talk about this more in a couple of weeks because views are a really interesting topic. There's a lot to say about views. So the last one I want to think about, talk about, explore a little bit is consciousness, is knowing. This is you know, one of the most subtle aspects of experience. Again, it's kind of obvious in a way. We know that we know. You know, we sitting here. Are you aware that you're aware sitting here? I mean, mostly we can answer the question yes. But what is it? What is that awareness? That's a lot more tenuous. It's a lot. It's like, this is really kind of like the air we breathe. It is so present for us in a way that the consciousness is just so embedded in every moment of experience that we have trouble actually teasing it apart from the experience. So I'm going to just do a little exercise with you. You know, so one thing I'm going to just point to here is that every moment of experience, kind of like with every moment of experience of action, there's an intention. With every moment of experience, there's some kind of consciousness that comes up with it. Now, there's mindfulness, which is the awareness of the conscious awareness, essentially. And then there's a consciousness that happens in every moment of experience that we may or may not be mindful of. So these are different things. Mindfulness and consciousness are different things. And what I'm going to point to here is more toward the mindfulness thing, but it'll give you a little flavor. So every experience that we have, the experience, the sight, the sound, the smell, the taste, there's the experience, and then there's the knowing of it. So there's a pressure of the on your butt, and there's a knowing of it. There's the seeing that's happening, and then there's the knowing that you're seeing. There's hearing and knowing that you're hearing. So there's the sound, the vibratory experience, and then there's the knowing of it. And these things happen right next to each other. They come up together, which is why it's kind of so hard to tease them apart. But just now, in your experience, notice the sensations of your hands. So you know, there's the feeling of the sensations of your hands. And you know the feeling. Now, the knowing may be harder to connect with, but there's the feeling. And then there's an awareness. There's some kind of an awareness about that feeling. And now to begin to point to this quality of the knowing, pay attention now to the experience of your lips touching. And you can know that experience. But did you know it before I pointed it out to you? So that's a little taste of the quality of knowing. What is it that, I mean, that the sensations were there before I pointed it out to you? What is that quality that kind of illuminates the feeling? Can you begin to touch into that? For me, so this is a subtle experience. It's hard to kind of touch into this in a way. But you might begin to see that, particularly around body sensations, that there is, you know, there's the physical part of it. So the, you know, there's the pressure, there's the sensation of your hands. And that there is a mental component that knows it. The knowing, your hands don't know. Hands don't know the feeling of hand. The mind knows the feeling of hands. And so you might begin to get a little bit of a sense of the mental part that allows the feeling to be recognized. So it's harder to see this as a pure quality. But one way that I found in my own experience that is an interesting place to explore this is if there's something unpleasant happening in your experience. You know, if there's a slight uncomfortable sensation in your body somewhere. There's the feeling and the unpleasantness of that. The knowing of it is neutral. Knowing doesn't care what it knows. It can know pleasant, it can know unpleasant, it can know beautiful things, it can know ugly things. So the knowing is really neutral. It's just like a mirror, it just reflects. So the knowing itself is really neutral. And so if you, in exploring this, you know, finding a slightly uncomfortable situation, uncomfortable physical feeling, you might begin to see, okay, there's the physical feeling. And then can I see the knowing of it? And one way that you can do this, incline the mind towards this recognition, is to use a kind of a mental prodding towards the knowing by saying in your mind something along the lines of, unpleasantness is known, or burning is known, so that you begin to kind of see that there is a knowing quality that is taking in the unpleasantness or the burning. And when the mind actually can connect with that knowing, the feeling of the experience shifts. It's quite interesting that when the attention is on the knowing and the neutrality of knowing, the unpleasantness is no longer so apparent. And so this for me has been a way that I have begun to kind of recognize the knowing in contrast to an unpleasant experience. It's very clear when the attention is in the knowing, because the unpleasantness almost disappears in being with the knowing. So that's just a little bit of an exploration around knowing. So through this exploration of body and mind, through this exploring the bodily processes and the mental processes, we begin to see there's so much cause and effect linking back and forth between these two. Bodily processes impact our mental experience, create reactivity, create frustration and suffering, create happiness and joy. Our mental experiences of happiness and joy or frustration and anger in turn impact the body. So we see this cause and effect relationship between mind and body. Things that happen in the body affect the mind. Things that happen in the mind affect the body. And in seeing this cause and effect relationship between mind and body, we really start to see that things are just kind of unfolding in a very natural way. There's this just causes and conditions, causes and effects. And as we see this, as we see, even just looking, exploring intention is a great place to see this. We see, sitting in a computer, that we sit there for a while and the body creates thirst. Thirst creates the intention to satisfy the thirst, which creates this intention to move. It's just like this process unfolding. There's nobody there who really is the decider. I am the one doing the thirst. I am the one doing the decision to get up and get the water. It is just a process unfolding. And what we think of as this entity or me or I is kind of an overlay on these processes. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to believe me about this. But explore your experience. Explore your experience looking at these bodily processes and mental processes and how they interact, and you will start to see that things happen, but there's no one there doing it. This really begins to allow us to let go of the suffering. As we deeply connect to the understanding that there isn't anyone here to protect or defend, there's no problem. So we have a few minutes. Are there any questions or comments? I covered a lot of terrain tonight. Yeah. In the back.
Shall I pause before I speak?
That would be great.
I want to say thank you. And I want to also talk about something that you talked about last week. And just to give a little bit of background, I've been trying to sit for probably the last 3 or 4 years. And quite often, it has been a painful experience. And many times I question my own sanity and motivation. Because one of the definitions of insanity is to continue doing the same thing and expect different results. And many times after sitting, I would be in a more distressed state of mind than when I began. And I still felt a sense of being drawn to this tradition, but I also felt a sense of getting beat up at the same time. And something that I saw talking last week about the physical sensation, the development into concept, development into thought, and then the development into some sort of mental, excuse the expression, but I experienced it as a mental diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. Papancha, we called Papancha, it last week.
Yeah. And the exercise of going through, looking at each state and becoming aware of the spaces in between each state and the comparison between each part of the process, I started for the first time being able to see the beliefs and the judgments. I mean, primarily the judgments,
mm-hmm.
because that was, that I think was the most painful part of the experience. And also realizing that I could go back to the beginning. I could go back to the start, you know, that each step along the way was not preordained.
And yes.
That I could, you know, I wasn't trapped in this, I guess, preordained sequence that when this happens, I will respond this way. When this happens, I will respond that way. And it's made sitting a lot more attractive. And not only that, in my daily life and in my relationships to, you know, or even as I'm driving somewhere and I'm thinking about something, I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, okay, here I go again. And just to sort of step back and not, I don't know, just see the silliness of how thoughts can progress. And yeah, just to be able to see judgment coming and not mistake it for the truth, but as a perspective on a situation.
Yes.
And go back to the beginning again, you know?
Yep.
So.
Great.
Thank you. I'm very grateful for that. And I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about how long it took.
Let that go. There's one. We need to stop now. But I just will. It's 9 o'clock. But I'll just say one thing and hopefully finish before 9:01. One teacher talked about her process, where she just for 11 years felt like she just didn't really know what meditation was about. But she kept being drawn back to it. And at one point, her teacher was guiding them through a movement meditation, and her teacher said, "Feel the numbness." You know, she was talking about all kinds of feel the sense, the, you know, the vibration, feel the tingling, feel the pulsing, and she said, "Feel the numbness." And at that moment, this teacher said, "Numbness? Oh, I can do that," and that was her shift. And she said, "All it took was 1 second, 11 years, and 1 second." You know, that it, all of that work in those previous 11 years wasn't wasted. It's like, we don't know what's happening. You know, something about the previous few years got you to the place where you could hear this. And I'm just so happy that you heard it and can see, start to see, that you have a choice. That's great. Just let go of the idea that it took a long time. Just let it go. Move on from here. This is where we have the choice to the place the this is where we can move on from. So thank you for sharing that.
I may I say one other thing?
If you can say it quickly.
And I guess also in looking at that 3 or 4 years of having the idea that there are others that are also going through that too, and wishing for something to happen.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you. Thank you all. And I'll be away next week, but back the following week. Thank you.